regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company, the last edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company for 2025. We will see you on the flip side of the new year next Monday. We're going to be talking with James Pinero on today's program. James is, I believe, the executive editor at New Criterion. He has also written a fantastic column for the New York Post detailing his experience at acquiring a New York City carry permit. Yeah, he is one of a select number of New Yorkers who can theoretically exercise their right to carry a concealed firearm in public. Practically speaking, not so much, right? And we'll get into that as well. Before we get to that interview, though, I do have to share some great news. Bearing Arms contributor and my good friend John Petrolino awarded a number of awards by the New Jersey Society of Professional Journalists in their 2025. Let me make sure I get the name of this award correct. The Excellence in Journalism competition. So John received first place in the Metro Division Best Coverage of State Government for his series documenting potential abuses in the permit to carry application process that ran at Bearing Arms. He also won first place in Best Coverage of Municipal Government for a story at Bearing Arms, permit to carry denial over a driving record. And he also received second place for Best Coverage of Municipal Government for a series of articles at Bearing Arms all about gun ownership being alive and well in the Garden State. In addition to those three awards, John also won second place in the category of Best Short Documentary for his interview with armed citizen John Kabor. Let me make sure I pronounce this correctly. John Kabarakis, who used his legally owned firearm to defend against a attempted home invasion. So, again, you know, if you are a regular reader to Bearing Arms, you already know the outstanding work that John does. But the fact that this work is being recognized by journalists in New Jersey, in anti-gun New Jersey, in an industry that, frankly, is chock full of anti-Second Amendment media bias, I think says a lot, A, about John Petrolino, and it also says something about the professionalism of the judges there with the NJ Society of Professional Journalists. So congratulations to John Petrolino for the well-deserved accolades. I would remind you as well that John is one of the finalists for Best 2A Writer at the Gundies. So if you have not voted for him, go and vote for John in the Gundy Awards. And hopefully we'll have some more accolades to share with you for John next year. All right. With that in mind, let's get to today's conversation. Again, James Pinero joins to talk about his experience in obtaining a concealed carry permit in New York City, the highs, the lows, and the gauntlet that must be run before you can exercise a fundamental civil right. Take a look and a listen. James, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's really good to see you, sir.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wrote about your piece in the New York Post last week, but I'm thrilled we could get you on the program to talk a little bit more about this because, you know, here we are 3.5 years after the Bruin decision. The May issue concealed carry regime is supposedly over and done with. We know that there are about 17,000 New Yorkers with a concealed carry permit. That's up from about 4,000 when the Bruin decision came down. And you are one of those 17,000, right?
I guess I am. Yeah.
I have to say, you know, like it's so the numbers have, you know, grown, obviously, from what they were a few years ago. I think they're still well below where they should be in a city the size of New York City. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. But let's talk about the process that you went through. So first of all, why did you decide to apply for a carry permit?
Yeah, so my story began really with my father. I grew up in New York City with my dad, and he had a premise permit. That's all he could get at the time. He was a professional, an architect here in the city. He got back into firearms in the 1990s. He said he was interested in kind of just target practice. He liked you know, he remembered his time in basic training, training for Korea, and kind of thought, well, this is a nice hobby to take up. And it was something that he could do with me. I was a teenager. And so he got me involved. We went to a wonderful gun store in Little Italy. It's no longer existent. John Jovino Gun Shop. I mean, it was famous. It had an enormous paper mache pistol hanging from its sign. And I mean, there are all these great photos of the place. Anyway, we got my first bolt action 22 rifle there, and I would go to a range with him and practice on the little rifle, and he would practice on his pistols. And it was something we did together. And, I had great memories of doing that with him. He passed away in 2019. And so I looked to take possession of the pistol. It was an old service revolver, blued, 357, actually from the late 1960s. Okay. And it's a daunting process to look into what you need to do as a resident of the city of New York. You just don't even know kind of where to start. You know, can I even do this? I mean, that's the first question you ask. Is it even possible?
Yeah.
And I had many false starts in going through that registration process, because
this is just to keep the gun in your home, right?
Even to take ownership of it. Yeah. I couldn't even have it at the time. That's correct. Even to have it in your home, even to hold it, even to do that in the city of New York. Finally, I kind of, pulled up my pants and said, okay, we're going to do this. This is important. I want to, reconnect with my father in this way. And I did it. I registered myself, and I looked into also the Bruin decision, which you talk about. And it's a fascinating decision. 2022, Clarence Thomas wrote the opinion, the majority opinion of the courts. And this was a challenge to the laws at the time, which said that you had to show cause to have a concealed carry permit in the city of New York, which meant that really most people couldn't get a concealed carry permit. Only if you dealt with diamonds or cash or that kind of business could you justify yourself to the city, to the state, saying that I would like a concealed carry permit. Well, the court said otherwise. It said actually the right to self-defense shouldn't need a particular claim. This is a right that's enumerated in the Constitution. They're certainly right about that. I mean, the reason we have rights is not because they're popular, it's because they're unpopular, and they need to be defended for that reason. If they were popular, we wouldn't need to enumerate them, right? But that's why we have them enumerated. And thank goodness the court saw that and understood that. So what it meant is that now, yes, any New Yorker can apply for a concealed carry permit, which is kind of replacing the premise permit, I think, in the process, as I understand it, because there's really no need to have a premise permit when anyone can now apply for concealed carry. So I went through that process. I did the training. I filed all the documents. The NYPD has a website now that allows you to register to much of the registration online, which is actually an improvement since my father's day, when it was all paper and you had to get these checks, particular postal money orders, and bring them down yourself and all that. I mean, now it is online, so anyone can start the process and see what it's all about. You also have to take an 18-hour class, which I did, and show the certificate for that. And once that's done and you're approved for a concealed carry license, then you can't take possession of the firearm yet. Then you have to have the firearm registered to that permit, have the permit sent back to you with the firearm listed on the permit, and then finally it's released to you. And that's what I did. You know, I had heard stories that it was going to take years and years, and probably right around 2022, when the Bruin decision came down, mm-hmm. and you had all those thousands of applicants, it really got backed up. It's not so backed up now. It took me 6 months, which, I mean, for New Yorkers is pretty fast to get that process done. And as I write in my article for the Post, I found it an interesting process. I did. I really enjoyed the 18-hour class. I kind of enjoyed the camaraderie. It got me involved in a wonderful local range near my office called the West Side Rifle and Pistol Range. And they are a wonderful lifeline for anyone interested in pursuing this process. They're at FFL, so they can help with the transfer documents, they can advise, they can offer the training course, which I took there, and they're also a range. So you can join the range once you're a registered concealed carry. You can't do anything on the range, except you can fire a 22 rifle. That's allowed within the city and state. Okay. Without a permit. So if you want to just practice on a rifle there, you can also do that.
You know, I'm lucky that I was able to go to John Jovino's gun shop before it closed down. And I've been to West Side as well. And you're right. It's great. It just kind of tucked away very, it's not like it's got big garish neon signs out front. You know, it's just kind of a hidden gem.
It's a wonderful throwback place. You know, this is what kind of makes New York great, isn't it? It's these holdouts. That it's not just a faceless, condo. It's this place has been around since 1964, predates all the gentrification in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, now there's, you know, fancy restaurants and designer stores and furniture stores. And but this place has been holding on there. It's where they actually shot a scene from Taxi Driver when Travis Bickle practices at the range. It's that range. And I have to say, they have not updated the place since that was filmed.
I'm curious. And by the way, congratulations on it only taking 6 months, because that is, I think, pretty fast. I mean, we've got lawsuits that are ongoing where people have, you know, been waiting a year or more to get approved. So hopefully, you know, we can speed that up. I would say 6 months is too long. I think that what was the application fee? Do you remember? It's almost $500, right? To apply.
Yeah, no, it's substantial. There's the application fee and the course is expensive. I think the course might be another $500.
Yeah.
It's not an easy process at all. Right. I mean,
character,
it's a burden,
right?
Character references, you got to get certified documents.
And you still have to go to an in-person interview at some point.
Right? Yes, and you have to get fingerprinted, obviously. There are many steps. I would say it's kind of on par with applying for maybe a little higher than applying for a mortgage or, you know, that kind of process. It's very involved, many steps. You could just throw up your hands, as I did, and said, I got to come back to this later. I mean, the good thing is that with the online system, you can start it, you can get to page 3 and say, okay, I got to take a break. Now I got to go back to it. And that's what I did, at least. You know, it took me, it was 6 months since I pushed the button on it, I would say. It wasn't 6 months since I started the application process. Mm-hmm. It was since I submitted it.
Okay.
So I heard back from people said, like, I just gave up. I couldn't go through the process. So that's part of the reason the process exists, is to dissuade people from going through the legal process, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I think it just encourages people to follow an illegal process, which I don't think anyone should do. You should go through the legal process.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I wrote a story for Bearing Arms earlier today. Jessica Tisch, the NYPD commissioner, announced, I guess, on Monday that they've seized 25,000 guns over the last 4 years. And I thought, well, how many concealed carry permits have they issued in that same time period? And the best I can figure is right around 20,000. So if you're taking more, you know, quote unquote, illegal guns off the streets, then, you know, folks are able to legally exercise their right to bear arms. I think that's evidence of a problem. And there's clearly a lot of work to be done. But, you know, again, your column in the New York Post, I think, lays out this process and helps people who maybe are thinking about this understand, okay, here's the gauntlet I'm going to have to run. And, you know, you talk about, there are a couple of things I want to get back to with what you just said. The class that you took at Westside, were you surprised at, you know, who your fellow classmates were? And was it a cross section of New York?
It certainly was. I think everyone was looking around there kind of wondering who my classmates were going to be at this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I'm often pleasantly surprised in New York. You know, you enter the subway car and you say, well, actually, we're neighbors here. And I feel like it was a neighborly group at Westside, really a range of ages, of backgrounds. Clearly, some people had a premise permit already and they were upgrading to concealed carry. Other people had never touched a firearm before and they saw for whatever reason, maybe it was the, you know, attacks of October 7th, They feel vulnerable in their synagogue or temple. Or maybe they just feel like, you know, I want to be a responsible New Yorker. I want to be proactive and not wait till this becomes a necessity and now I can't go through the process. I want to be ahead of that. And I think that's a responsible thing to do as an American, to have firearms literacy, you know, to have proficiency, to know, to not buy into, I think, the scare tactics of the left around firearms, but to just understand what you're talking about, understand how to hold it. It's a long process if you do it properly. The training is a long time, and it's good to start that sooner than later.
Yeah. Did you have any concerns about writing about this and, you know, sort of outing yourself as a concealed carry holder in New York City?
You know, I probably should have concerns just because, I don't know, most people don't like to broadcast their lives. I'm a columnist. I feel a responsibility to talk about something that I feel is important. And it kind of would go against my professional ethics to withhold something that I'm doing that I feel other people should know about. You know, as I was going through the process privately, everyone was asking about it. I was encouraging people privately, you know, here's what you need to do if you want to do this yourself, because they were interested in it. And I said, you know, this really should be a column because it's unfair to not let people know about this.
Have you gotten a lot of feedback? Since?
Yeah, interesting feedback. I mean, I think a lot of encouragement to the piece. But also several emails, letters, just saying, you know, you didn't mention this, you didn't mention that. Of course, you can't mention everything. Right. There are so many trip hazards in the process that you almost learn as you go through it. For example, the limitation on capacity. You know, someone said, oh, I had a Beretta, you know, the magazine held 13. It couldn't be reduced. There was no way to kind of adjust that. In New York City, the magazine capacity is 10. And so the person couldn't get that firearm registered and had to kind of give it up because it couldn't be registered. They couldn't figure out a way to get a reduced capacity magazine to make that a legal firearm in New York. So that's one challenge that someone told me about that they faced. Others said, look, I tried the process. I just gave up. It was too much. They wanted me to get these things notarized and this, that. And I just said, forget it. I understand that. I almost felt the same way myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, as you say, I think this system is meant to dissuade people from applying. I think the way the system is set up is meant to chill the exercise of this fundamental civil
rights. It definitely is. And I will say, I do want to say the licensing division of the NYPD is not the problem. They are all very pleasant to work with. Whenever I interacted with them, they are professional. That's not the issue. It's really the laws that are in place that make it so challenging to go through. And, you know, you want to talk about dissuasion. When you get the permit, the big issue now, and this is what happened after Bruin, is that the legislature imposed all of these additional limits on where you could possibly go with that firearm. And in fact, the limits are more draconian than what existed before Bruin.
Absolutely.
So in de facto, you know, your right to conceal carry is more diminished really in New York City than it was perhaps even before Bruin came down. And what I mean by that is the sensitive place laws that were put into effect. Basically, the legislature, the left-wing legislature, understood this decision was going to come down. So they concocted a whole legalistic means to make sure it didn't have any teeth. And what they said is that, okay, you can get a concealed carry permit, but you can't take that concealed carry weapon to every single place in New York City, essentially, you know, so you can't bring it on any transportation. You can't bring it into a park. You can't. So that means you can't bring it on the subway. You know, you can't bring it on a bus. You can't go to your range with it, essentially. You can't bring it through Times Square. And by Times Square, what we're talking about is really all of Midtown. Yeah. And there are these really ridiculous signs up that say gun-free zone, that are kind of like the legally mandated signs, and they're all covered in graffiti and stickers and everything. You can't even read them anymore. And this is supposed to tell us that, okay, law, you want to be law abiding. Okay, then look at this invisible sign. You don't go past it. Of course, there's been plenty of gunplay with illegal firearms in this zone because no criminal is going to say, oh, wait a minute, we can't, you know, look at the sign, you know, it's preposterous. So it's really more trip hazards in the whole thing. And during the training, they tell you, like, you know, don't mess with that. Don't get a concealed carry permit and be foolish. Take it into these zones and get your firearm taken away. Maybe get a charge in the process. Like, stick by the letter of the law for now. And what we hope for is that this law will be challenged because it's not in the spirit of the Bruin decision at all.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is those challenges are ongoing and underway. But you know, you're right. Back when hardly anybody could get a New York City carry permit, those who had a permit could carry it almost anywhere. Right? You could get on a subway, you could get on a bus, no issue, because
that's exactly right.
Concealed carry wasn't banned. But then when they had to, oh no, now the average New Yorker can get a permit. Okay, now nobody can carry anywhere. And
that's right. What if you live in this zone? You know, we were talking about it. I mean, it's almost like they haven't even thought it through, nor do they want to think it through. If you live in this zone, as I understand it, you can't even carry the firearm in a case, locked case through these areas as you could with a premise permit. So, I mean, it really makes it truly impossible to really use it effectively if you wanted to as something for self-defense.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, you know, like I said, there's ongoing litigation. Maybe in the new year, we'll see Pinero versus NYC. Do you think?
I would just say, I know you had Harmeet Dhillon on. I think she's a wonderful person. She's doing great things. You know, I would just encourage Harmeet to look at New York City and look at the sensitive place laws, which are really absurd, just designed to trip up law-abiding New Yorkers. Encourages illegal firearms, discourages legal firearms. I hope she'd look at it and say, you know, this is just absurd, these laws.
I echo that thought as well, and I hope that New York City will be one of the targets of the DOJ Civil Rights Division in the Second Amendment section in the new year. But I also hope we get a chance to continue talking with you, Jim. How often do you get to the range these days?
I try to go once a week. I'm very fortunate. West Side's very close to my office. And so it's, you know, a nice thing to do. It's kind of the way my father did it. You know, he would go just on his off time as just a way to kind of refocus the mind. West Side is a great just place to kind of hang out. They have free coffee and donuts and very friendly. The TV's on, the local news is on the TV. And it's nice to see different walks of life when you're there. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, retired detectives and NYPD who go through and are using the services at West Side. So I try to go once a week. And then I've spent a lot of time through this process, and this I was encouraged through the 18-hour class to do this, is to, you know, there's a lot of great online resources too. Masad Ayoub, I look at a lot of Wilson Combat videos just to kind of focus on, you know, little things, grip, stance, just how to handle the weapon. These questions, I'm still an amateur at this, you know, I'm still a novice, and I know that. And I think everyone should acknowledge, you know, their limits. And so I know it's taken me a while to kind of become more proficient at it. And I'm slowly going through that process myself.
Well, I'd love to be able to touch back with you here in a few months and just see how things are going and see how you're progressing in your training and proficiency and, you know, really just, you know, life as a gun owner in New York City.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, I hope the numbers you saw people applying for concealed carry maybe have an uptick from the article. I would feel like I did my job if we see that happen.
Listen, if nothing else, I think you did a very good job of helping both, you know, those who are curious about getting their concealed carry permit and frankly, you know, those New Yorkers who maybe don't have an interest, maybe who maybe are opposed to the idea of concealed carry. I hope that they too have a better idea of, like, okay, here's the gauntlet that has to be run in order to, you know, exercise this right. No matter what you think about this right, it is enshrined in the Constitution, and we should be able to exercise it.
Yeah, and I would add also, you know, dealing with issues of state lines. I mean, this is a big issue too. Is that, you know, I can have this concealed carry permit in New York City, but, you know, does it translate to other states? No,
right.
You know, this is very challenging.
Does my Virginia permit translate to New York City? Absolutely not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, that makes no sense, too. I mean, there really should be national standards on this as there is with the driver's license.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we've got legislation that probably is not going to pass the Senate, even if it passes the House. But the Supreme Court actually could take up a case. It's got a case called Markey versus Massachusetts that'll be discussing in conference early next year. Schoenthal versus Raul is a challenge to the ban on concealed carry and public transportation in the city of Chicago. So, the court takes one or both of those cases, then, you know, that would certainly have an impact on what you're able to do with that lawfully possessed firearm there in New York City.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, well, we'll all follow it very closely.
Absolutely. James Pinheiro, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's a real pleasure, and hope you have a happy new year, and look forward to talking to you again in 2026.
Nice joining you. Thank you.
And thanks to James for joining us on the program, and yeah, looking forward to touching base with him in the new year. John Jovino's gunshot, by the way, it was really sad. I think COVID took out John Jovino's gun shop. I don't think they were able to survive the extended closures. And Westside, I think, was worried about that as well. But I'm glad to see that they made it through the pandemic. And in the post-Bruin environment are a beacon for New York City's small but growing Second Amendment community. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of Minneapolis. Prosecutors pin two Minneapolis crimes days apart on same teen, a Metro bus shooting, and a man's killing. So not only are they pinning these two crimes on a teenager, 17-year-old Jeremiah DeRay Omar Deer, he was already known to law enforcement. Omar Deer has been charged in Hennepin County District Court with second-degree murder, stemming from the December 23rd shooting of Ashantez McCoy, as well as a three counts of felony assault in connection with a series of shots that were fired that hit a bus on December 19th and wounded three people. Deer was arrested on December 23rd, remains in custody ahead of a hearing. I guess a hearing that took place yesterday in juvenile court. They are trying to have him move to adult court because, in addition to the severity of these crimes, at the time of both shootings, Omar Deer was on probation after pleading guilty to attempted murder for his role in the shooting of a man in November of last year at a bus stop. The victim said he believed that he was being targeted in retaliation for an earlier shooting. So here you have a 17-year-old. Let's say a year ago, when he was 16, right? 16-year-old pleads guilty to attempted murder. And a year later, he's out on probation. What the hell's going on in Minnesota, where a juvenile can commit a violent offense like that and be walking around the streets 12 months later? And by the way, it's not like he's accused of committing these crimes the day he got out of juvenile custody, right? The Minneapolis Star Tribune doesn't say how long, if any time, Omar Deer spent behind bars on that attempted murder charge after he pled guilty. It's entirely possible he walked away with probation. So I know that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, you know, is already drawing a lot of fire for the massive fraud that has been documented there in Minneapolis and across the state of Minnesota under his watch. And I know that Tim Walz is going to make gun control a primary issue in the upcoming legislative session to deflect away from some of the other problems that he's facing. But I sure hope that Republicans can call attention to the soft on crime policies that have been implemented under the watchful eye of Tim Walz, that have led to individuals like Omar Deer getting a slap on the wrist for trying to kill somebody. That slap on the wrist allowing him to be free and now charged again with the successful murder of somebody, as well as wantonly firing multiple shots, injuring three people on a city bus. Does the buck stop with Tim Walz? I mean, he says so, right? He's the governor of Minnesota. So, yeah, I'm laying some of the blame for Omar Deere's slap on the wrist at Governor Walz's feet. On to today's armed citizen story from Fort Smith, Arkansas, where police say a man was protecting his girlfriend and children, as well as himself, when he was shot and killed an intruder in the city. This was actually a couple of days ago. This was, I believe, the not this past Sunday, but Sunday before. Dispatchers at the city's 911 call center, according to the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette, got a call at 8:51 p.m. that Sunday from a man who reported that a stranger wearing all black clothing was trying to get into his apartment. Caller was inside the apartment. By the way, this was John Petrolino calling me. I'll give him a call back after we get done. Caller inside the apartment with his girlfriend, three kids, told dispatchers that the intruder, who was identified after he was fatally shot, tried to force his way into the apartment through the door. Caller said he was able to push that intruder back outside, was able to secure the door, but the would-be intruder stayed outside. He was knocking on windows. He was speaking through the door. The homeowner didn't recognize the guy. Said that he thought that this individual was intoxicated, maybe under the influence of drugs. He said, "You know, I've got a." He told dispatchers, "I've got a gun. It's secured and safe, but I've got it in my hand now because I'm afraid for my family's safety." Officers got to the scene about 8:54 p.m. as they were trying to access the property through secured gates and fencing. The resident called back and said, "Hey, this guy's opened a window and he's trying to get into the apartment. He's yelling at us." He then fired one shot, and the suspect left the window area, according to the department's report. When officers were able to access that secured area, they found the individual, identified as a man named Wayne Nance, on the ground about 50 feet from the apartment door, had a single gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead by emergency responders there at the scene. At this point, again, all indications are this was a lawful act of self-defense. Nance lived in nearby Muldrow, Oklahoma, had a history of charges relating to a robbery and assault, according to records from the Sebastian County Jail. In July of this year, he was actually arrested on suspicion of two felony counts of armed aggravated robbery. His most recent booking into the jail was November the 4th on suspicion of third-degree assault on a family or household member. In Oklahoma, Nance had a number of criminal charges as well, including charges of sodomy and domestic abuse involving assault and battery back in 2009. So the case is, I guess, still officially under investigation, but again, just based on the account of the homeowner there and the police investigation to date, it does appear that this was a case of self-defense. So we'll keep our eyes on any more updates there out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a good Samaritan who helped rescue a couple and their pets from a car crash. This taken from the Good Samaritan's dashboard cam. That's scary. This was in California on Highway 50 near Lake Tahoe. Ruben Tala, who goes by RJ, he's a staff sergeant in the Air Force. His wife, Yvette Benares Tala, and their baby, they're all heading to Lake Tahoe when this SUV spun off the road in front of them and kind of came to rest, basically leaning up against a tree that had already fallen. So this was a dead tree, not the most stable of things. And beneath that fallen tree, there's a drop off of several hundred feet. Now, again, you can see the angle of that vehicle. Right. It would not have taken much for that vehicle to simply flip over and go careening down the side of that mountain. So RJ immediately jumped into scene or into action. He said, the only thing I had in mind is rescue those passengers. He and several other Good Samaritans were able to get to the vehicle. Tala said he needed to stabilize the car. So he asked another good Samaritan, bring him a rope. They used it to tie the car's front steering wheel to a, I believe it was a live tree, just to kind of help, you know, keep that vehicle stable. And then they basically formed a human chain to extricate the driver and the passenger and their animals to safety. And everybody was able to get out. Okay. I mean, again, this, that picture is just absolutely terrifying. And the fact that RJ and so many others came to the aid of that family desperately in need of help in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. We thank all of those good Samaritans, including Ruben Tala and his wife for their heroic efforts that day. All right, that is going to do it, as I mentioned, for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company, the last of the year. I want to thank you for not only being a part of this program, but for being a part of my life. You know, this year did not start off the way I wanted it to. It has been an interesting experience the last 12 months, navigating the world and life without Missy, my wife of 27 years. And the support and the friendship and the love that has been shown to me by folks like you has just really been overwhelming, and it has been so appreciated. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much. I hope that 2026 is a good year for all of us, a great year for our Second Amendment rights. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. I'm going to be taking a couple of days off from BearingArms.com, but Tom Knighton will be holding down the fort. You may see a couple of stories from me between now and next Monday, but don't count on it. And again, thank you for everything. Until we talk again, be well. Be safe. Have a happy new year. And be free.